Okay, okay, Jimmy Ray said, moving between us. Let's all calm down. We're all friends here. The hell we are, I said, not taking my eyes from Ryan. My one arm held Casey tight, the other balled into a fist at my side. Adrenaline coursed through my veins and it felt fucking good and reckless. I wasn't a violent guy, but if this bastard wanted a fight, I'd give it to him. The band members, with some prompting from Jimmy, moved toward the house. Ryan was too drunk to fight, and I think he knew it. He flipped me the bird and let himself be pulled away by his mates. Lola remained behind.
We're all good? Jimmy asked. You okay, kitten?
Casey moved away from my arm but stayed close, holding on to the cuff of my jacket. She gave a stiff smile.
Sure, Jimmy. I'm great.
Screw that, Lola said, glaring at her manager. If Ryan touches her again, I'll chop his dick off. Get rid of them, Jimmy. Find another opening act.
I liked this, Lola. Casey waved a hand.
No, no, it's not a big deal. It's okay.
No, it's not okay, I said. Jimmy rubbed his chin.
This has to be a big thing? Right now? I got 100 people coming to this party.
Even as he spoke, other cars were arriving, cabs and limos, a steady stream of people. If I didn't move the limo soon, it was going to get boxed in. I looked down at Casey. She was drunk. And if I let her go inside that house, she'd only get drunker. Or pass out. Ryan might decide to take what he wanted anyway. And in a house that size, with a party raging, who would know?
Keep to the routine,
I thought, even as my hands moved on their own. I took Casey's face and tilted it gently, making her look at me. Her broad mouth trembled under red lipstick. Dark makeup pulled her eyes into long blue sapphires, pale blue with a darker ring around the iris. I hadn't noticed that before.
Beautiful. She didn't belong here.
You want to leave? I asked. Her eyes held mine, liquor dimming the shine I'd seen in them during our lunch. But her voice was steady when she answered,
Yeah, I do.
I smiled at her, strangely proud. Done. Her glassy eyes widened in surprise, then with a gust of whiskey-soaked breath, she wilted against me.
It's all good, Jimmy, she murmured. Jonah, he's so good to me.
I walked her to the front seat of the limo and helped her in. Her head lolled against the headrest, her eyes closed, and I buckled the seatbelt on her to keep her safe.
Pack her a bag?
I said to Lola, shutting the door. She narrowed her eyes at me, sizing me up, then nodded and went into the house. Jimmy looked after her, then swung around back to me.
Pack a bag?
She's staying with me for a few days, I said. He blew air out his cheeks wetly.
We're out of here on Tuesday.
He was drunk as hell too, but trying to hold on to some authority.
I got 25 more cities lined up, and she's under contract. Just so you know the score.
I know it, I said, my voice stony. I pulled up all of my 6 feet, towering over him. She's taking a break from this scene.
And then what?
The voice of caution asked me. I ignored it.
A break. Yeah. Okay.
Jimmy lit a smoke and jabbed the 2 fingers that held it at me.
I know where you work. You want to keep your job? You take care of her.
Better than you have, I said.
You think you're special to her? Her hero?
He snorted a laugh.
Take a number, buddy.
He retreated into the house that was rapidly filling up. Lola came back with a duffel bag and a small leather backpack. I took them and walked to the trunk.
What's the deal here?
Lola asked.
Are you two?
No. I tossed the bags in the trunk. She needs some time away, obviously.
So she stays for a few days on your couch and then rejoins us before we leave Vegas?
That's the plan. I slammed the trunk lid. If you're worried whether or not she's safe with me, she is.
I swear on my life I would never hurt her, okay?
Lola nodded slowly.
Okay, fine. This could be good. It wouldn't kill Casey to stay sober for 48 consecutive hours. I love her to pieces, but she's a fucking flake. This is our big break. It's my big break. And if she can't keep her shit together long enough, she'd see that it's her big break, too.
I doubt it. I moved to the driver's side.
I'm going to call her,
Lola told me, following.
To make sure she's all right?
I would hope so, I replied, and slammed the door. You can't peel out in a limousine, but I came close, and the pink palace faded out of my rear view. I drove back to A1 to return the limo, hustling Casey through the garage into my truck. By some miracle, no one saw us. Back at my apartment, it was last night all over again, except that Casey didn't smell of puke and smoke. The scent of her perfume, her sweat, and a tinge of whiskey permeated the air as I helped her out of the truck. This time she wasn't out cold, but swimming in inebriation, sometimes deep under and hardly able to keep to her feet, sometimes coming up for air to walk with me. Twice she threw her arms around my neck and murmured in my ear how grateful she was I'd saved her. My skin broke out in goose flesh, and my groin tightened as I went to lay her down in my bed.
Jonah,
she sighed, still clinging to me, trying to pull me down on the bed with her.
You're so good to me. The last good man on earth.
Casey, wait. I tried to gently pry her arms from my neck, but she was tenacious. Her lips brushed my skin above my uniform collar. Warm, wet kisses under my ear, working up until her teeth grazed my earlobe, and I had to clench my teeth. She licked and teased, her mouth a gravitational pull, and I was being sucked in, ready to collapse over her, into her. My hands wanted the softness of her skin and hair, the full curve of her breasts under my palm. Casey, I said, we can't.
We can,
she whispered against my cheek. Her mouth moved along my jaw, her lips blazing a trail across skin that hadn't felt a woman's touch in more than a year. Her hands tangled in my hair, little breathy noises of want issuing from her throat. Her mouth had almost found mine when a pungent waft of whiskey filled my nose, bringing me around like a slap.
What the hell are you doing?
I pulled away before her lips found mine and disentangled myself from her embrace.
You're no fun,
she murmured, then stretched her arms over her head, her fingers splayed on the wooden bed frame. Her breasts pushed against the flimsy, glittery material of her black halter top.
Don't be like that. Come to bed, baby.
Reality dosed me like a bucket of ice water. I could be anyone right now. You need to sleep it off, I snapped. I unzipped the duffel that Lola had packed for her, and dug around until I found a t-shirt and a pair of soft shorts. I laid them out on the bed and started for the door. No sooner had I shut off the light than her voice carried to me, small and fragile in the dark.
Wait, Jonah?
I didn't stop, but turned, my shoulder sagging. Yeah?
Stay. The ceiling? It's spinning. Don't do it.
I did. Drawn in. I turned and moved slowly back to the bed. The only light came from the street outside, a white light casting a silvery glow over the bed and through her hair that had fallen from its knot. She held out her hand. I took it and sat beside her. Casey sidled up close to me, pressed her cheek against my thigh, and wrapped her arm around my knees.
Where am I?
Her voice was slurred a little, growing weak as sleep took her.
Where am I, Jonah?
You're safe, Casey, I murmured. I held her for a little while, then helped her change into her comfortable clothes, taking care to keep my eyes averted as much as possible from her body, pale and smooth and stretched out before me. I pulled up the covers, and because I thought she wouldn't remember this in the morning, I stroked her hair until she fell asleep. Then I went out, closing the door softly behind me.
Chapter 9. Casey.
Someone was running that damn chainsaw again.
I jerked awake, blinking at the early morning light streaming in from a small window. It illuminated a bedroom. Bed, dresser, nightstand. All plain in a bachelor pad kind of way. On the floor next to the bed were my duffel and the small leather backpack that served as my purse. Outside the door, the whirring continued. Jonah and his god-awful blender. It took me a blurry minute to put the puzzle pieces together from last night. Memories came to me like scattered photographs. The drummer from Until Tomorrow, our opening act, pawing at me, before Jonah knocked him on his ass.
Do you want to get out of here?
And I had felt so safe. I sat up slowly and pushed back the covers to find I was in a t-shirt and sleep shorts. A vague memory swam up. Jonah helping me peel off my leather jeans, helping me change clothes. I kissed him, just his neck and ear, but he smelled so good. I tried to pull him to bed and... Oh my God! Mortification ran scarlet over my skin, and I held my aching head in my hands. No, no, no. Not Jonah. Not him. It wasn't the alcohol. Not entirely. It was the goddamn insatiable need for connection, driving me to find comfort anywhere and any way I could. Jonah took care of me, protected me, and I'd reduced him to the same level as the nameless roadies I took to my bed. I glanced at the nightstand. A glass of water, 2 aspirin. Tears sprang to my eyes. The clock radio read 7:04. Jonah would be leaving for the hot shop any minute. I got up, opened the bedroom door, and padded into the narrow hallway. The blender went quiet, and I heard men's voices talking. Someone else was here. I shifted on the balls of my feet, frozen. Part of me begged to slip back to the bedroom and hide, pretend none of this happened. The other half, sick of hiding behind Jägermeister and whiskey, pushed me toward the kitchen. Jonah looked cleanly handsome in jeans and a pale blue t-shirt. He took a pill from the Sunday compartment in one of those day-of-the-week medication containers. The rest of the compartments were crammed full, their lids bulging into domes. He washed the pill down with what looked like a tall glass of mud and ground up grass. The grimace that twisted his lips told me the drink didn't taste any better than it looked. A gruff cough jolted me from my thoughts. The hot guy from the photos on the living room wall leaned against the counter, clad in a black t-shirt and jeans. His muscled arms, inked with tribal tattoos, crossed against a broad chest. His dark hair was cut short, and a thin growth of stubble grew along his jaw. He was a bulkier, more rugged version of Jonah. It had to be his brother. But where Jonah's face was handsome in its open, friendly demeanor, his brother's was closed down, tense and dark. His angry gaze darted between Jonah's medication and me, as if he couldn't believe the two things could exist in the same space. The feeling of being a trespasser again twisted my already unsteady stomach. Then Jonah turned to me. The smile that broke over his face when he saw me warmed me like a summer sun. Hi, I said. Good morning.
Hey.
Jonah caught sight of his brother's astounded expression and shifted his own quickly back to neutral.
Casey, this is my brother, Theo. Theo, this is Casey Dawson. She's going to be crashing here for a few days.
Nice to meet you, Theo. Despite his death glare from hell, my instinct was to hug Theo. I was big on hugs. And because he was Jonah's brother, I immediately felt a sense of affinity for him. But his cold stare pinned me to my spot. Theo's eyes raked me up and down, taking in my messy hair, my long t-shirt that covered my shorts and made it look like I wasn't wearing anything underneath. It was pretty obvious what Theo assumed was happening between his brother and me, and he didn't like it.
When did this happen?
He demanded of Jonah, not even bothering to hide the accusatory tone in his voice. This? I'm a this? I don't think so, pal. Before Jonah could reply, I said, "This happened last night. We got married at one of those drive-through chapels, didn't we? Johnny? Jordan?" I snapped my fingers, my face scrunched up in confusion. "Wait, don't tell me. It's definitely a J name." Jonah smothered a laugh. Theo glowered but ignored me.
"She's staying here? For how long? When were you going to tell me?"
"Yes, until Tuesday, and I was just about to, but Casey beat me to it," Jonah said. "And Jesus, you're being rude as hell, even for you."
The mother of all awkward silences descended on me as the brothers stared each other down and held a private conversation. I could practically hear the thoughts passing between them like words. Finally, I cleared my throat and pointed toward a grocery bag on the counter, surrounded by creamers and sugars. "What's all this?" Jonah's eyes slowly left Theo's.
"I went out and got a few things."
"That's thoughtful of you this early in the morning." I sniffed at the air. Decaf never smelled so good.
"That's because it's regular."
Jonah pulled a UNLV mug from a cupboard, filled it, and handed it over. "Thank you." I moved carefully past Theo. His dislike of me was still emanating off him like heat from a furnace. I took a stool on the other side of the counter, tucking my shirt up a little to prove that I was wearing shorts. I saw Theo's gaze land on the sugar skull tattoo on my left thigh. For a brief moment, his expression loosened, grew curious. I started to strike up a conversation about his tattoos when his death glare returned, like a door slamming in my face. He pushed himself off the counter.
"You ready, bro?"
he said.
"Let's hit it."
Jonah finished off his protein shake and tossed the cup in the sink.
"I'll be back in a few hours," he said to me,
"so you're not left stranded for lunch."
Theo's eyes widened.
"You're not going to work through lunch?"
"First time for everything," Jonah replied.
"No, I don't want to throw off your schedule," I said. "You have a lot of work to do. I'll be fine here, really." I glanced at Theo. "Really?"
"Really,"
Theo said, deadpan.
"Really. I'll be back for lunch," Jonah said. "If you need anything else, there's a convenience store up the street, about a 10-minute walk.
Give me your cell number, and I'll call if I'm running late."
Theo watched darkly as Jonah and I exchanged cell numbers.
"You're still coming to dinner tonight, right?"
he said. He looked at me, his lighter brown eyes stony and hard.
"We do it every Sunday, family only."
Jonah scrubbed his hand over his face.
"Jesus Christ, Theo."
For half a second, Theo looked contrite, then turned to stone again.
"I'll be waiting in the truck."
He strode to the apartment door and shut it hard behind him. "Nice meeting you," I said to my coffee cup.
"I'm so sorry. He really has become a pain in the ass since..."
Jonah laughed shortly.
"Since birth, actually."
"Does he work with glass too? Is that why he's going to the shop?"
"No, he's a tattoo artist."
"Really? I was thinking about getting another tattoo. Too bad he hates my guts."
"He doesn't hate you. He's just protective.
He helps me out at the shop sometimes. I have an assistant too, Tanya, but she's off on Sundays." "So he drove here to pick you up?" Jonah raked his hand through his hair.
"Yeah, we're close, and he likes to hang out."
"So under all that glowering and barking, he's a softie." Outside, a car horn blared, loud and long. I burst out laughing. Jonah laughed too, and then a short silence fell. I figured it was now or never if I was going to apologize for last night. "That was nice of you to let me crash in your bed last night. I was pretty drunk. Didn't mean to evict you, or you didn't, Jonah said.
I don't sleep in the bed. I haven't in about 4 months.
I blinked. Okay, I'll bite. Where do you sleep? He nodded his head toward the living room area behind me.
In the recliner. My doctor wants me to sleep semi-inclined, for better breathing. It's not a big deal, he added quickly.
I frowned. It sounded like a big fucking deal. What would happen if he slept lying down? He'd stop breathing? I couldn't ask that, so instead I said, Is that comfortable?
It's just another adjustment.
Why don't you buy one of those fancy beds, where you can raise the head?
Not in the budget,
Jonah said, and a sour look contorted his face. He bent forward, hands on the counter, his head hanging between his arms. My heart jump-started. Jonah? Every muscle in my body tensed. Are you okay?
Fine,
he said to the floor, sucking in drafts of air.
Just nauseated.
Do you want some water? I was already off the stool and rummaging his cabinet for a glass. I filled it halfway from the faucet and pressed it into his hand. He unbent himself and drank a little.
Thanks,
he said.
It's passed.
I could smell his aftershave. Clean and masculine. The memory of his skin under my mouth made my knees tremble. I slipped back to my stool, cheeks burning. Jonah took a last deep breath and set the water aside.
Thanks again.
Does that happen a lot? I asked. When you take those pills? He nodded.
They're immunosuppressants. They prevent my body from rejecting the heart. But their side effects aren't fun.
I tried to think up something better to say, something comforting, or something funny to make him laugh. But all I could think of was that I was sorry he had to suffer this at all. From outside, the car horn blared again.
My brother, the epitome of patience, Jonah said. See you in a few.
He was at the door, turning the knob. In another few seconds, he'd be gone, and I still had unfinished business. I mustered my courage. Jonah? He stopped, turned.
Yeah?
I'm sorry about last night. He stiffened.
It's fine. No big deal.
I wet my lips that had gone dry and slipped off the stool, moving to stand behind the couch. A barricade. No, it is a big deal. To me. I'm really sorry that I tried to... It's not a sex thing. I plucked at a piece of non-existent lint on the upholstery. Okay, it's a little bit of a sex thing. Who doesn't like sex, right? I laughed weakly, then coughed. But mostly, it's just the comfort. The afterward. Being held by a man while I sleep. I'm sure that sounds pathetic, but it's what I like. And I'm sorry I tried to do that to you. You're more than that. Jonah shook his head, his expression pained.
I can't be more than that, Casey.
No, I meant you're a friend. Or maybe we could be friends, if you want. And that's all I want. Honest, I can't be with anyone right now, even if I wanted to. In case you haven't noticed, I'm a mess.
You're no more a mess than anyone else, he said in a low voice.
My chest tightened, pushing tears to my eyes. Thank you for saying that, even though it doesn't feel true. He smiled, and while it wasn't the megawatt smile that lit up his whole face and thrilled me, it was warm and kind and comforting.
I really gotta go, he said. I'm late.
Thanks, I said as he opened the front door, for the coffee and letting me stay here. Thanks for all of it. I mean it.
You're welcome,
he said.
I mean it too.
Chapter 10 Jonah. Theo's black Chevy Silverado was idling on the curb.
About damn time, my brother said, scowling as I got in. That chick is already throwing you off.
It wasn't her, I said. It was the damn Gengraf.
Nausea?
Theo said, his tone instantly morphing from anger to concern.
You okay?
I shot him a look. That chick got me some water, and I felt better.
Theo snorted.
His eyes gave me a final once-over. Then he maneuvered his truck through the light Sunday morning traffic toward the glass studio. I watched North Las Vegas go by my window. Strip malls and gas stations, apartment complexes smaller and older than mine. But my thoughts were on Casey's apology.
I can't be with anyone right now.
Perfect. Neither could I. So why did my chest ache like an old bruise?
You thinking about her?
Theo said.
Casey?
No, Mother Teresa.
Yeah, Casey. Who the hell is she?
Why are you so hostile? She's just a girl crashing on my couch.
Theo watched the road, his shoulders jerking up in a shrug. I don't want to see another fucked up situation like you had with Audrey.
I was with Audrey for 3 years. I've known Casey for all of 24 hours. You can chill out.
How much did you tell her about your situation?
More than I should have. I shifted in my seat. She knows I had the operation.
Theo gaped at me so long I thought he'd crash his truck.
He turned his eyes back to the road, his expression grim.
Okay, spill it. What's the deal with her? He said. For real.
I rested my elbow on the door, rubbing my chin.
Her deal is she's got a few days off until her band leaves on tour. She's taking a break. That's it. For real.
Why doesn't she just stay in a hotel?
And since when do you tell total strangers about the operation?
She doesn't do well on her own. I glanced at him. It's not a big deal. I'm giving her a break and she's good company. She's got a good sense of humor. We get along well.
We just clicked.
You met her yesterday. Theo's voice was low, but I could hear his temper rumbling with it, like a distant thunderstorm.
He kept his gaze steadfast to the road.
Are you fucking her?
Jesus, Theo.
Yet the image of Casey splayed out on my bed reached for me. I'd wanted her last night. Wanted to give in to her. Have a woman's arms and legs wrapped around me one more time. I wanted to feel a woman's soft body beneath mine. To be on top of her and inside of her and...
Dude, are you fucking her?
I forgot Theo could read my face like the front page of a newspaper.
No,
I said. Not that it's any of your business. She's crashing until Tuesday. Then she's going back on tour with the band. She'll be traveling all over for months.
And you're cool with that?
Of course I'm cool with it. What could possibly happen between us? Or between me and anyone for that matter?
Theo's jaw clenched. Don't start with that doomsday shit.
You don't know for sure if...
He shook his head, unwilling to voice the possibility.
The meds might be working.
They probably are working.
Then why were you such a dick to Casey?
He jerked his shoulders in a shrug.
I give a shit. The doctor said you had to be careful.
He said I had to not overexert myself. He didn't say I had to become a monk.
I miss being with a woman.
Being intimate with her?
You're the one who doesn't do one-night stands,
Theo said.
Something I'll never get.
He ran a hand through his hair.
Look, if you want to get laid, get laid. I just don't want another Audrey situation. I don't want some chick to bail on you when you need her to fucking stick around.
Neither do I said.
What Audrey did?
It hurt. But I wasn't in love with her.
We'd come to a red light. Theo turned in his seat.
What?
I loved Audrey, but I wasn't in love with her. I listened to my own words, waiting for some pain to follow. But the only pain wasn't for what I had with Audrey and lost, but for something I never had at all.
I've never been in love.
Theo's eyes widened.
You weren't in love with Audrey?
Really?
Because you sure spent a shitload of time with her.
I loved her, but she didn't... consume me. I didn't lose my train of thought when she walked into a room, or feel that feeling you get.
I shook my head, searching for the words.
We were a good match. Like a pair of shoes, I thought. But I didn't have that feeling.
What feeling?
Theo asked dubiously. That feeling you're supposed to have when you're with the woman you're in love with. I can't describe that feeling because I've never felt it. Have you?
Theo gave me an arch look. I'm saving myself for marriage.
I snorted a laugh. I think you've got that backward.
Theo's eyes hardened again.
So you weren't in love with Audrey? And you're having this revelation now? Because of Casey?
I turned my eyes to the window.
I just met her, for Christ's sakes.
No, I just meant, since we're on the subject. It's something I missed. Being in love.
You haven't missed it, Theo said. You might not be missing anything.
If you go back to Morrison and get another biopsy.
I sighed, exhausted from having the same conversation for the millionth time.
What would happen if I did? I would find a miracle waiting for me? The atherosclerosis isn't going to reverse itself.
No, but it might have slowed the fuck down or stopped altogether.
Maybe you have longer than you think. A lot longer.
If you weren't so goddamn pessimistic.
He held on to a hope that wasn't there. But I knew the truth. I felt it in the marrow of my bones, in the weakening pulse of my heart. Its walls and passageways hardening slowly like cooling glass.
If I get another biopsy, I said, I'd lose at least one full day at the shop.
Theo said nothing, and anger flamed red hot in me.
I'll go back after the gallery opening, okay? Damn it, Theo, I'm just trying to talk about something real for a goddamn change.
I miss having someone in my life. I'm not selfish. I know it's too late now, but I missed it. And it sucks, okay?
Yeah, man. Theo said, retreating to a quieter tone. That's cool. We've just never talked about it before.
About what you want.
You mean, what I want before I die?
You can say it, Theo. I wish you would.
What for? He snapped. What fucking good does that do to anyone?
Me? It does me good. So I don't feel like...
What?
So goddamn alone. We pulled into the parking lot of the hot shop, and Theo killed the engine. He sat straight, eyes forward as he spoke.
Look, if you want or need anything, just tell me, okay? You're always saying, don't bucket list me. But if there's something you want and I can give it to you, tell me, okay? Anything at all.
Dying, I learned, is not a team sport. It's a solitary endeavor. Everyone I loved was standing on dry land, while I was alone on a boat as it slowly pulled away from the shore. And there's nothing anyone could do about it, but watch it happen. I immediately felt shitty for letting my anger out on Theo, or telling him what I missed or wanted or could never have. What were they but just another burden for him to carry? One more thing he could do nothing about. The pain of it was written in every line of his face.
Okay, thanks, Theo. Thanks for looking out for me.
I mustered a smile and smacked his shoulder.
Come on, let's get to work.
Chapter 11 Jonah.
Theo could have been a glass artist if he wanted to. He was talented and utterly fearless. He loved the fire, but hated the fragility of the glass afterward. Theo liked permanence. He worked with thick black ink that punched the skin, made it bleed, then remained embedded forever. Our father thought he was wasting his incredible ability to draw and sketch by working with tattoos, but it was just right for my brother. We worked in near silence, but for the roar hiss of the furnace, the hot shop was quiet, and my thoughts drifted to our conversation, to Theo, who had been with me through my illness, through Audrey's betrayal. She hadn't broken up with me, she'd told Theo, and then skipped town, leaving him to break the news. I rolled the pipe in my hand, watched as the flames enveloped it, made it glow hot and white.
I sat on a chair in Dr. Morrison's office, not the white exam room where he usually saw me, with its long white-papered table and the little tray of instruments, latex gloves, and individually wrapped syringes. That room was for patients who were receiving treatment. Patients still in the fight. Today I was in the private office of Dr. Conrad Morrison, cardiovascular surgeon and cardiac transplant specialist. Rather than a battlefield, this was where victory champagne was popped, or where white flags of surrender were thrown. Theo sat next to me, slouched down, gnawing on his thumbnail, his leg jouncing. I could feel my younger brother's energy radiating out. He took the yellow glow of his fear and burned it, until it was red hot and ready to combust. I expected to be racked with dread. I felt nothing. No dread. Not even fear. I was beneath fear. Numb. We waited for 5 minutes in that office. I watched the clock circle off each one. 5 minutes that felt like 5 years, and also no time at all. The door opened and Dr. Morrison walked in, a file folder tucked under his arm and a grim look on his face. My borrowed heart slammed against my ribcage, shattering the numbness. I immediately wanted it back. Feeling nothing was better than this bone-deep terror. Dr. Morrison had the appearance of an eighth-grade social studies teacher. Late 50s, receding hairline, tall and somewhat lanky. His eyes were sharp, surgeon's eyes, with a vast wealth of medical knowledge and expertise behind them. He offered me a thin smile and extended his hand to shake. "Jonah, good to see you. Sorry to have kept you." I half rose to my feet on watery legs and shook his hand. "No trouble," I said, eyeing the file folder tucked under his arm. That file that told a far-fetched story of a perfectly healthy young man who'd never been sick in his life but for a bout of tonsillitis in the 5th grade, struck down by a virus that destroyed his heart. It was thick now, filled tissue type analysis, diagnostics, blood work, lab work, an urgent surgery, a mile-long list of immune-suppressant medications, and finally, biopsy results. 17 of them. Number 18 was the day before. Its results would be on top. "Theo?" Dr. Morrison said with a nod. He didn't offer his hand, and Theo didn't rise from his seat, only nodded in return. His leg jounced faster. Dr. Morrison moved behind the large mahogany desk to sit in the leather chair. He set the folder on his desk, but didn't open it. He folded his long-fingered hands. Those hands had removed my diseased heart from my body 15 months ago, and then cradled a new one. They gently lowered it into the empty space, reattached all that needed reattaching, put my ribcage back in its rightful place, and sewn me back up. Instead of welcoming the new heart, and despite the various cocktails of immunosuppressant drugs I'd been taking religiously for the last 13 months, my body attacked. A slow but relentless attack, hacking away at this foreign intruder piece by piece, leaving behind wounds that became scars. Ultimately, it was the scars that were killing the new heart, and killing me. Dr. Morrison inhaled. "The results of your latest biopsy are not what we were hoping for." He spoke, and I heard the words, a string of medical jargon that I had become infinitely familiar with over the last year, so that I didn't require a layman's translation. Words like atherosclerosis, stenosis, cardiac allograft vasculopathy, and myocardial ischemia. A bunch of Latin spliced with English, sewn together with science and authority, and distilled into the most final of bottom lines. "I'm sorry, Jonah." Dr. Morrison, his voice heavy and low. "I wish I had better news." I nodded mutely. "I'll have to tell my mother." The thought burrowed deep into my guts like a boiling poison, burning the last numbness away. I nearly puked in my lap. Somehow I spoke instead. "How long?" Dr. Morrison steepled his fingers on his desk, given the rapid progression of the CAV. 6 months would be a generous estimate. I nodded, mentally doing the math. 6 months. My art installation was due to be finished for the gallery exhibit in October, 5 months from now. That's cutting it close. Theo bolted from his chair, bringing me back to the present. He paced behind me like a panther, his dark eyes fixed on Dr. Morrison. The anguish in his voice struck me with every syllable. 6 months? What happens in 6 months? Nothing. Screw your 6 months. He goes back on the list, right? The donor list? If this art is failing, then you give him another. Dr. Morrison pursed his lips. There are some ethical implications. Fuck the implications, Theo said. If he's on the list, he's on the list. A new heart comes up, he gets it, right? He turned to me with blazing eyes. Right? I couldn't take another heart from someone else on the list who could live a long and happy life with it. I had a rare tissue type. The rarest. Finding a donor who was a close match was almost impossible. 13 months ago, in a rush to save my life, they'd given me the best heart they could. The closest match, and my immune system was wrecking it. It would only do the same to another. I wasn't a martyr by any stretch, and I didn't need to be. Medical ethics and procedures would take the decision out of my hands. Dr. Morrison's next words confirmed it. Yes, Jonah is back on the donor list. He turned to me. But your rare tissue type will again be a factor. The chronic rejection manifested here, as well as the way your kidneys are handling the immunosuppressant medications. I can't say I'm optimistic the board will approve a replantation. I could feel Theo's rage like a hot wind at my back. What do you mean they won't approve it? They'll let him... He was on the edge. I could hear it. And I couldn't take it anymore. I had to protect my little brother, just as I always had. Keep him safe. I rose to my feet, my legs strong now. Thank you, Dr. M. I offered my hand. We'll be in touch. Dr. Morrison stood up as well, but didn't shake my hand. Instead, he patted my cheek in a grandfatherly manner. You'll be in my prayers, Jonah. Tonight and every night. Prayers. Theo spit the word in the parking lot. What the fuck good will prayers do? He's a scientist. He needs to get his ass in the lab or something and figure out how to stop that goddamn rejection. Then it hit me. All of it. Like a lightning bolt striking the top of my head and tearing straight down, nearly cleaving me in two. I gripped Theo's arm and he stopped with a jolt. What is it? Jonah? Talk to me. I pulled him close, the blood flooding my brain and my words coming out on shallow puffs of air. My head swelled. I could feel time racing past me, second by second. And I couldn't be done yet. I wasn't done yet. Help me, Theo. What is it? You have to help me. Do you need a doctor? His head whipped around the rows of parked cars, ready to call for help. No doctors. Not anymore. Theo, listen to me. I need your help. Tell me, he said. What do you need? Anything, Jonah, anything. Help me finish it, I said, my eyes boring into his. I have to finish it, Theo. The installation, no matter what. I have to leave something behind. Don't talk like that, he said. You're not going anywhere. I had to make him see. I held on to my brother, clutched him tight. He was solid and real, while I was already dissipating into the air, particle by particle. Don't let me vanish, Theo. Please, help me. Theo's eyes flared at my words, and his grip on my arms became painful. I'll help you, he said through gritted teeth. I'll help you. Anything you want or need, I'm here. And so are you. You're not going to vanish, Jonah. God damn it, you're not. I nodded and sucked in several drafts of air. Okay, thanks.
I'm sorry I panicked, but I'm good now. Sorry. Let's go. We can go now.
I started walking, and Theo had no choice but to follow. I could feel him watching me like a hawk. The solidity of him calmed me more. Not his anger. That was a shield between himself and the world. But what lay beneath? His devotion to those he loved. Unwavering and unbreakable. Permanent. The blood drained from my head, and my borrowed heart settled down. Still, it ticked away the time with each beat. I had a finite number of pulses that could be counted and measured. 6 months. I can do this, I thought, as we climbed into Theo's pickup truck. If I made a schedule and kept to it, if I worked as much as I could, no stops, I'd make it. I'd leave something behind. I wouldn't vanish into thin air. I'd use my air to infuse and shape the molten glass, capture my breath within it. And when it hardened, a part of me would remain locked inside forever. Forever, I thought, feeling a little of the heavy weight lift, a lessening of the dark shadow trailing me, even in the bright sunshine of the desert. A little bit of hope to carry me through. A purpose. It was time to get to work. The gather of glass on my pipe dripped back into the furnace, jerking me from my thoughts. Like the glass, my life had been molten and malleable and full of potential. Now it was solidified, fired and hardened. No refiring. No starting over with someone new because there was no time for someone new to become someone significant. I had my installation. Something that endured, that wouldn't wither and die. Something that lasted. The memory was more than a year old, but nothing had changed. It was time to get to work. Let's grab some lunch and keep going, I told Theo. His eyebrows rose.
Yeah, I thought you were going to...
I'll text Casey and tell her I have to work through. She can order a pizza or something, I said, ignoring the ugly feeling in my gut, the guilt that hung heavy in my heart for ditching her. Theo rubbed his jaw, looking like someone who'd fought to get his way and now felt bad about it.
If you're sure,
I'm sure, I said, pulling out my phone. I have to stay on schedule. And that was the truth. End of story.
Chapter 12. Casey. I took a shower to wash last night off of me. All of it. The show, the booze, and how I'd thrown myself at Jonah. After, I wrapped myself in one towel, made a turban over my hair with another, and stepped out of the steam. I swiped the foggy mirror over the sink to see my reflection. My hand lingered on the warm glass. On the other side were Jonah's medications. He trusted me with them, and that made me feel good about myself in a way I hadn't felt in a long time. But thinking about Jonah's actual heart transplant made my guts twist, like I'd just tossed back something super strong on an empty stomach. Terrible medical catastrophes struck innocent young people every day. But this one seemed like some cosmic screw-up, a terrible mistake. I couldn't work out why the situation felt so wrong. I moved my hand to the bare skin above my towel. I tried to imagine what it would be like to have someone else's heart beating in my chest. Did it feel like his own? Could he feel it wasn't? Once, when I was a kid, I accidentally swallowed an ice cube. I felt the cold, hard rock of it in my chest as it went down. I wondered if Jonah felt that way. Not the cold, but the presence of something hard and heavy and foreign in his chest. You're being stupid, I told myself. I'm sure it doesn't feel any different. Or it feels better. His old heart was sick. The new one has given him life. The thought bolstered me a bit. Though the suspicion of something being not quite right didn't leave me. I put on cut-off shorts and a tank top and exited the bathroom. But for the AC turning on the window, the apartment was silent. Peaceful. I sat on the couch to admire Jonah's beautiful glass on the coffee table. I picked up the nautical paperweight, the sea life forever suspended in a quiet ocean. Worlds away. 24 hours ago, my residence had been one of 5 bedrooms in the Summerlin house, the halls echoing with dozens of voices, loud music and drunken laughter at all hours. I wasn't the only partier in our group, just the most dedicated. My room in that house was trashed, clothes strewn all over, makeup messes in the bathroom. The only glass around wasn't delicate art, but overflowing ashtrays or empty bottles littering the floors. The peaceful quiet of Jonah's apartment seeped into me. I absorbed it, tried to bank it, sock it away for later, when I had to hit the road again. My chest tightened at the thought of saying goodbye to Jonah. I'd only known him for a handful of hours, but it felt like longer. I was different around him than I was with other men. Instead of engaging in a fumbling, grasping union of bodies in a drunken haze, we talked. It felt like laying the foundation of something more lasting. Jonah had some magic quality about him that let me feel like myself. I liked being around him, and I think he liked hanging out with me. Given time, who knew what might come of it? Only, we didn't have time. Anything we started was just going to be torn up again when I left on Tuesday. "We can stay in touch," I murmured to myself. The crazy, relentless tour schedule loomed in front of me like an endless road. But a text or a call from Jonah might make it more bearable. Just thinking about it made leaving a little less daunting. The ring of my cell phone broke the silence. I jogged to the bedroom and fished the phone out of my bag to see Lola's number. "Hey."
"Hey, girl,"
she said, sounding tired on the other end.
"You still alive?"
"Yeah."
"But you sound rough," I said.
"How was the party?"
"Oh, God, I can't even."
I heard the flick of a cigarette lighter, and it occurred to me I hadn't smoked since last night's show. Or wanted to.
"It was epic,"
she said, exhaling.
"Booze was consumed, police were called, sex was had by many, including yours truly."
"Oh, yeah?" I sat on the edge of Jonah's bed.
"Who?" "Jason Hughes, the bassist from our soon-to-be former opening act. It's too bad, really. He's hot. You should appreciate the sacrifices I make for you."
"For me?" Then I remembered Ryan Perry, the drummer, getting grabby with me last night. Jonah stepped in, and Lola demanded Jimmy fire until tomorrow.
"Yeah, for you," Lola said.
"Maybe we could..."
"We have 25 more cities and 6 months' worth of touring left with these guys. You really want to take your chances?"
I glanced down at my hands in my lap. I'm sure Ryan was drunk and being stupid.
"Yes, to both. Neither excuses him."
Lola exhaled, her voice revved up to lecture mode.
"You get drunk and stupid too, Case, and it would only be a matter of time before he took advantage of the situation. Hell, I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet."
"Wow, thanks," I said, my cheeks burning. I almost told her I could take care of myself, but I had zero evidence to back that up. Lola had watched over me since I was 17 years old, when the band's success swept me up in a whirlwind of recording and nonstop touring. I'd never stood on my own 2 feet, and hadn't ever been sober long enough to try. But I could try, if I had the guts.
"Sorry, I'm grouchy, hun," Lola said. "I don't want anything to happen to you. I don't want anything to wreck this, Case."
"I know," I said. "But getting a new opening act is a hassle. It might be easier for Rapid Confession to get a new guitarist." The words rose suddenly on my tongue, shocking me. But I couldn't spit them out.
"I don't see an alternative," Lola teased. unless we assign Hugo to you 24/7.
To babysit me. I suddenly didn't want to talk to Lola anymore. I had tonight and all of tomorrow before I had to be back on RC time, and I didn't want to waste a second of it.
I gotta run, I told my best friend. Talk later?
Sure, I'll shoot you a text.
Oh, hey, how's it going with the limo driver? He's adorable and hot. Not many guys can pull off that combination. Are you two getting along?
I could practically see her knowing grin, and my irritation flared. She wouldn't understand if I tried to tell her we were building a potential friendship, and she definitely wouldn't believe I hadn't slept with him. Hell, if Jonah hadn't been the gentleman he was last night, I would have slept with him. A sudden, pleasant shiver raced down my spine at the thought, and I crossed my legs. No, this is different. Jonah is different. He's not a guy I fuck at random. He's wonderful, I said. Goodbye, Lola. I hung up and jammed the phone into my bag, all the way to the bottom. Not an instant later, I heard a text come in. I dug it out and my heart rose to see Jonah's number. It sank when I read the words. Have to bail on you for the day. Too much work, then family dinner. Maybe order pizza? Sorry. Shit, I said. My hand let the phone drop back into my purse. Disappointment bit deep, not just from him canceling, but the terse, dry text itself. I typed, no prob, see you later, and looked it over, satisfied that it was casual and unconcerned. As it should be, I reminded myself. He had a schedule to keep, and he was keeping it. I hit send. The hours passed slowly. I didn't know how you could miss someone you'd only known a day and a half. Around noon, I did what Jonah suggested and ordered a pizza. Vegetarian, in case he wanted some later. And a six-pack of Diet Coke from a local place that delivered. I channel-surfed while curled up on Jonah's couch. When I got cold, I went looking for the green and orange Afghan, finally finding it balled up in the hall closet. I had seconds on pizza for dinner, and found When Harry Met Sally on a cable channel. One of my all-time favorites, but I found myself drifting to sleep around 9 o'clock. My own sleep patterns were a mystery, since I usually stayed up until whatever party was over, and then crashed out after. But 9 seemed early as hell. I guessed I had a lot of catching up to do. I nodded off sometime after the stupid wagon wheel coffee table and woke up at the end of the movie, when Sally and Harry were at the New Year's Eve party. Sally was in the midst of declaring how she hated Harry, with the echo of the word love resounding behind every hate. I teared up, like I always did. It took a long time for those two to find their way to each other, even though they were right there all along. My fantasy was the opposite. I'd always dreamed my true love would swoop into my life, sweep me off my feet in one heroic gesture. I'd know him at once. A flame would burn between us immediately. No doubts or games. Love and lust at first sight. He'd rescue me from all the hurt and loneliness, and I'd never doubt I was loved. I thought Chet had been that guy. I was the proverbial moth to his flame, drawn to his light, only to be burned to a husk when it proved to all be a fucking lie. And then I had nothing. No job, no money, not even a high school diploma. God knew what would have happened to me had I not met Lola. I went from hanging on Chet's coattails to hers, and even now I was taking shelter under Jonah's roof. It had never bothered me before, but it did now. It bothered me a lot. I shut off the TV. Now the only light came from one little lamp. I thought about going to bed, but my eyes grew heavy and I was too tired to...
Casey?
A gentle hand on my shoulder.
Hmm?
I blinked awake. Jonah stood over me and then crouched beside the couch. You're back, I said.
I'm back.
His expression was pained, his rich brown eyes heavy.
I'm sorry I left you alone all day. It was a shitty thing to do.
No, I sat up, more awake now. You have work and your family.
It was shitty. You're only here for a little while, and I should have come back for lunch.
A warmth spread in my chest, and I became so aware that only about a foot separated us. I survived. I ate pizza. A lot of pizza. He smiled a little.
I was thinking maybe you'd like to go get dessert. Ice cream or something? I know it's late.
I'd love to, I said, and that warmth deepened to a flush that colored my cheeks. Can you have dessert? Jonah's bright smile returned, a slow tilt of his lips to a full-blown grin that made his eyes light up.
I'll figure something out.
Chapter 13 Jonah. I drove us to Sprinkle Cupcakes and parked along a back street. Harris Casino rose up on our right, and the strip was a straight walk west from the little cupcake shop. It was closed at this hour, and Casey's face fell until I showed her the ATM.
This is a cupcake ATM?
She said, staring at the bright pink square built into the wall of the closed shop.
Oh my God, that's the best thing ever.
I thought you might like it. I slipped my actual ATM card into the payment slot, and the menu screen lit up. Go ahead. She punched her order into the screen. A machine inside the ATM hummed, and a little door slid up to reveal her cupcake, a red velvet with cream cheese frosting.
That is so cool.
I ordered a plain vanilla cupcake. I turned from the ATM, juggling my wallet and dessert, just as Casey broke off a frosted piece of red velvet and offered it to me.
Wanna try?
Hold on. I tried to stuff my wallet in the back pocket of my jeans, but the damn thing wouldn't go. Casey stood on her tiptoes and held the little piece of cake to my mouth. I had no choice but to eat it off her fingers. Her head cocked, her eyes bright and electric underneath the amber streetlights.
Good, right?
I nodded, though I wasn't tasting any cake.
You have a little frosting.
She reached again, and her fingertips brushed the corner of my mouth. A whisper touch that crackled like a little current of electricity, straight down to my groin, where it sat heavy and warm. I offered her mine. Taste? That's all I could manage. Taste. I scoffed inwardly. Me, Tarzan. You, Jane. Casey took a small bite of my cupcake, and I watched as she licked her lips, staring in her mouth.
How is it?
I said, a split second before my stare would need an explanation.
Good.
Casey stepped back and flashed me a smile.
You have excellent taste, Fletcher.
We headed west toward the strip, ambling along a walkway between shops and restaurants, lined with potted plants and trees. It was after 11 on a Sunday, but Vegas was wide awake. Couples, groups of laughing friends and tourists speaking other languages walked past us or parted around us. We strolled and ate our desserts, heading across the boulevard toward Caesar's Palace. Then I turned us south. I wanted to show her the Bellagio Hotel. Let's stop here, I suggested. We leaned our arms on the white cement wall that buffered the pond in front of the Bellagio. Across the water, the hotel was lit up in gold and pink, curving toward the smaller structures of the casino below it, like an open book.
It's beautiful, Casey said.
She turned around to face the strip. The small-scale Eiffel Tower glowed in front of the Paris Hotel and Casino across the street.
Italy on one side, France on the other. She said.
You've really never been inside a casino? She shook her head.
Our tour schedule is so crazy, we haven't had any free time until after the show last night. That's why we're here until Tuesday, so Jimmy can hit the strip clubs and do some gambling. The last time I was here, I was too young to be allowed anywhere fun.
Did you come here with your parents?
No,
Casey said, turning her gaze to the still dark water in front of us.
I don't see them much anymore.
Too busy with the band? Will your tour take you through San Diego? I took a bite out of the cake, and when I looked up, Casey's entire demeanor had changed. She hugged herself, though the night was warm with a soft breeze, and the light in her eyes had dimmed as she cast her gaze over the dark water.
No, it's not on my schedule, she said. I haven't seen my parents in 4 years. My dad kicked me out of the house when I was 17.
I nearly dropped my dessert, and the bite in my mouth was like a jagged rock. I swallowed with difficulty.
He kicked you out of your house? At 17?
My tone was far too loud and hard. I was demanding an answer from her bastard of a father, not her. But Casey didn't flinch or retreat. I think she understood my outrage, maybe even felt a little boosted for it.
I snuck my 22-year-old boyfriend home through my bedroom window one night. My parents caught us in a compromising position. And that was it. My dad had never approved of anything I did. He hated my playing electric guitar. But that was the last straw. He let me pack a bag and lock the door behind me. I hadn't even finished high school.
I chucked what was left of my cupcake in a nearby trash can, appetite lost.
What kind of asshole turns his daughter out on the street?
And what about your mom? She didn't help you? Casey's shoulders jerked up in a shrug as she picked up her cake.
She didn't say a word. She never has. She's quiet and meek.
My dad isn't abusive to her, not physically. But he can turn off like a faucet.
Cold, bone-dry silence for days if he's really pissed. And my mom can't handle that.
So, she let you go? Maybe I shouldn't have asked, but I couldn't help it. I didn't understand how people could turn on their own children. That kind of parental failure.
No, violation. Was completely alien to me.
My childhood had been ridiculously free of troubles. Sure, Dad was hard on Theo and Mom was a compulsive warrior. But that was the extent of my complaints. My parents were good people.
They should have been your people,
I thought, looking at Casey. In a weird twist of fate, we each ended up with the wrong set of parents. Mine would have loved her and doted on her. They would have nurtured her music and been proud of her accomplishments. They'd give Firm appropriate discipline instead of throwing her out of the house. A terminally ill child was something her parents deserved. My plight, given to that cruel father and spineless mother, would make more sense. If Casey and I switched families, I'd no longer be afraid of the emotional burden I was leaving behind. And she'd be cherished forever.
My mom didn't fight for me,
Casey was saying. She chucked her cupcake away, too.
She lost her voice when she married my dad. I don't know if I can ever forgive her for that. But even so, I still call her sometimes. She doesn't say much, but I think she likes when I call. To know I'm still alive anyway.
How did you survive on the streets?
I wasn't on the streets. I followed Chet, the boyfriend my parents caught me with. He told me he wanted to marry me, so I tagged along as he followed one get-rich scheme after another. I followed him here. He was running out of money, so he had this great idea I could be a model.
She made air quotes around the word.
I shut that shit down immediately.
Good. My hands closed into fists and I jammed them into my pockets.
But once I told Chet I wasn't going to cooperate, it was all downhill. I was underage, I couldn't drink, gamble, or even get into an 18 and up club. He got tired of me real quick. Dropped me on my ass when he met someone else. Some showgirl.
What did you do?
I hitched back to California, thinking I'd try again with my parents, go back to school. I did really well in school, actually.
I believe it, I said. Casey smiled gratefully.
I made it as far as Los Angeles. I was staying at the YMCA and met Lola. She was 19, and in the same sinking boat as me. She'd just scraped enough money together waiting tables to get a cheap studio apartment and let me crash with her. When I turned 18, I got a job at the same restaurant.
and we spent off days busking in parks. I sang and played my guitar while Lola played drums. A few months later, we found a one ad from a gal who wanted to put a band together. And the rest is history. She held up her hands. And that is why to this day, I've never stepped foot in a casino. I nodded absently. My emotions roiled into a frothy rage at the men in Casey's life who had failed her so fucking badly. What happened to Chet?
Don't know. Don't care.
She said it calmly enough, but I'd learned by now that everything Casey felt was revealed in her large, luminous eyes. She cared about everything, passionately. She goes all the way up to 11. That thought helped to quell the anger that was chewing at my gut.
Feel that?
Casey asked.
That's the night dying a slow and painful death, thanks to my sob story.
I'm sorry I pried. She waved my apology away.
I don't mind. I like talking to you. I don't normally talk about my life, ever. Then it gets bottled up and I do something stupid like call my parents. I get rejected. Rejection makes me drink myself into a stupor. I start a riot in a green room and next thing I know, I'm waking up on my limo driver's couch.
A vicious cycle.
Oh, I don't know, Casey said. The couch part wasn't so bad.
A short silence descended. Despite every admonishment to keep to my schedule and not get close to this girl who was leaving in 2 days, I felt myself leaning in, wanting to hold up the pain she'd trusted me with, wanting to give her something in return.
Do you want to come to the glass studio tomorrow?
I asked. You could see how it all works. Or maybe watch me make something. I felt the back of my neck redden. I sounded completely arrogant and totally boring at the same time, as if I'd asked her to watch me polish my coin collection. But then Casey clapped her hands together.
Are you kidding? I'd love to.
Really? She used her index finger to lift one of her dark brows in an arch.
Really?
I leaned back, laughing harder than I had in months. Rusty gears inside me creaked from lack of use, and my embarrassment faded to nothing.
I've been dying to see how you make that beautiful glass, Casey said. I was beginning to think it was for show, Fletcher.
You ordered them from Etsy and passed them off as yours to impress the chicks. I'm legit, I swear. Her laugh echoed across the pond, and within it, I heard traces of a beautiful singing voice. She started to say something else when music filled the plaza in front of the Bellagio.